I'm Lee Hull.
And I'm Lee Esses.
And we co-host Writing Roots.
It's a 10-minute podcast in which we, an author,
and her editor,
cover lessons we've learned about the writing process.
So whether you're an experienced storyteller or still working on that first book,
now is the time to check us out.
Writing Roots is available on iTunes, Spotify, and anywhere you find your podcasts. And don't forget to always
write selfishly.
Sometimes you have to go away to get away to relax. Enjoy an affordable staycation experience at Wind River Resort and Casino. Standard rooms only $89 a night, Sunday through Thursday. Call or book online now, 1-800-280-UWIN or windriver.com. Offering mobile check-in and check-out, valid through March 20th. Must have a River Club card. Some restrictions apply. Use promo code WINTER21. Join us for a safe and comfortable stay at Wind River Resort and Casino.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts Wynn Carpenter and Terry Raposa. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archives link.
ACA, come out and play. Have you seen the bill we all have to pay? The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson state of mind.
Hi, my name's Nick Gardner. I have a show here on KCNR, Sunday mornings from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. every other Sunday. The name of my show is Poke the Hornet's Nest.
There's no mountain I can't climb. There's no tower too high. No plane that I can't learn how to fly. What do I gotta do to get through to you to show you there ain't nothing I can't take this chainsaw to?
I'm going to concentrate on local politics mainly, but we'll talk about national politics also. You'll get the view of the common citizen here in Redding, California. And remember, today is the first day of the rest of your life. Maybe it's a good time for a new perspective about what's been going on in our town, in our state, in our nation. I hope you tune in and hear the other side of the news.
Everybody, listen up!
Hi, this is Judy Maxwell. Life can happen in an instant. Sometimes you plan for it, like retirement or taking care of your family. Sometimes it's a surprise, like a winter storm with home or property damage. Sometimes it may be an unexpected accident or illness or even a premature death. Whatever life throws at you, you'll wish you had gotten the right insurance when you had the chance. That's where Maxwell Insurance can help. For more than a quarter century, we've been serving the North State because it's our home, too. Give us a call at 221-0441 to let us help you review your policies and prepare you for whatever your future holds. Maxwell Insurance, 1378 Hilltop Drive, 221-0441.
Your friendly oil change. Premier in all we do.
The seasons are changing. Keeping your family healthy is important. So is the health of your car. The longevity of your vehicle depends on you to make sure your oil, radiator, coolant, windshield wipers, and other vital systems have all been taken care of so your car can bring your healthy family through the seasons. Drive into Premier Oil Change today and experience the friendly oil change. Premier doesn't require an appointment, and you don't drop your car off or wait. Premier changes your fluids while you stay in the comfort and safety of your own car. Enjoy a free beverage and free Wi-Fi while our trained technicians perform our comprehensive 30-point certified service. Earn free oil changes with Premier Rewards. Learn more at PremierOilChange.com or visit us in Palo Cedro. Premier is in the Holiday Market Shopping Center on Lake Boulevard next to Waterworks Park, or in Anderson across from Round Table Pizza. All locations, you get a free car wash with every oil change. Home of the friendly oil change.
Hi, this is Brian Martin, General Manager of River Common Senior Living. One of the most rewarding things about what I do is watching the positive transformation that often occurs when a senior moves here to our beautiful, independent retirement community. Seniors can become isolated, find it hard to eat good, healthy meals, and even just get around. I call this a failure to thrive. At River Commons, we solve those challenges. You are surrounded by friendly people with similar life experiences. Chef Shalisa and her crew provide three delicious and healthy meals daily. Activities Director Ernie always has a wide variety of things to do, from arts and crafts to outings on our 25-passenger bus. Plus, we provide utilities, cable TV, scheduled transportation, weekly housekeeping, and more. We see seniors go from survive to thrive, and that is just a wonderful thing. Call today for a tour or luncheon a tour and experience River Commons for yourself. 221-2121 or on the web river-commons.com.
From the historic campus of Hillsdale College in Hillsdale, Michigan, where the good, the true, and the beautiful are taught, nurtured, and honored, this is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, bringing the activity and education of the college to listeners across the country.
We're not going to turn our country around unless we have a revival of knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Study, learn, and teach. Everybody you know. Make the people around you better.
This is your host, Scott Bertram, and that's Dr. Larry Arn, our first guest on today's program. Dr. Arn is president of Hillsdale College and also chairman of the 1776 Commission. We talked at length with Dr. Arn about the 1776 Commission and the 1776 Report, which is now available via Encounter Books. Dr. Arn, thanks for joining us.
Very good to be here, Scott.
We speak as the 1776 Report is about to be released via Encounter, a slightly expanded edition that people can find. And you also had a recent essay in the Washington Examiner about some of the things we'll discuss. We had Dr. Spaulding out a few weeks ago to talk about the 1776 Report, but we'll get into all that. Much of the criticism about the 1776 Report from the left has been essentially that it glosses over the history of slavery and racism in the country. What are they getting wrong in their criticisms?
Well, it's a factual point. The report is not that long. One can simply read it. The report identifies slavery as the chief blemish in the history of America. It remarks upon the fact that our most costly war was fought among ourselves to eliminate that. And then it takes the view that one must take, the only view one can take, which is that you have to remember that our republic is the first in history to begin with a universal principle that by powerful implication condemns slavery, written, some of them, by slaveholders, who then became agents of emancipation. Thomas Jefferson was a foremost one in this way. In the Northwest Territory, upon which we sit right now, it was the first time a free government had ever grown, the first time our government grew, and because Virginia insisted on it, Thomas Jefferson leading, no slavery was ever permitted here in Michigan and in Illinois and Indiana and those five. So this, and here's the way to think about it. This is one of the most beautiful statements any American ever made. This is by Lincoln. The Declaration of Independence presents a standard maxim for a free society, and every familiar to all, revered by all, constantly looked to, constantly labored for, and even though never perfectly attained. That's a key point, mm-hmm. right? America is populated by people, and they're no more perfect than the people, by the way, who are on a rant and a tear in the country today. And if they get the power that they want, they will abuse it because they are people, right? But he says, the very attempt to attain these principles, every attempt, constantly spread and deepen the influence of these principles and augment the happiness and value of life to all peoples, of all color, everywhere. That's the American project. And to write it off is to write off the most precious set of principles in world history.
You spend some time in the Examiner piece discussing the positive good thinking about slavery. Where does that originate, and what are its implications?
Well, it John Calhoun was a friend of students of Francis Lieber, who had studied with Hegel. And he learned the doctrines of history and historicism. What that means is our consciousness, our being, is made by the events in our past and in the past generally. And it's an easy step. If this historicism, by the way, which is behind Marxism and which is behind Nazism, Churchill said they differ as the North Pole from the South. If it turns to the right, this crazy doctrine, it becomes Nazism or fascism. If it turns to the left, it becomes communism. And both are despotic tendencies. Well, Calhoun got the idea out of all this. First American to argue this powerfully, and it was unknown, this argument in the founding, that the blacks have evolved to a lower place than we, and so it would be an abomination for them to live with us as equal citizens. Abomination, you like that word. And the alternative view from the Declaration of Independence is stated by Lincoln beautifully in many places, and it basically is the view that if a thing can talk and it's an animal, it's a human being, and it has to be treated like a human being. He says once, Lincoln says, they want to treat the slaves as property down there in the South, but they can't really, because, for example, they passed laws making it illegal to teach them to read, and that means they know they're not hogs. And they passed laws trying them for murder, and they never knew that for their farm animals. See, so they knew what they were, and you can't escape the knowledge of what they are. And so any attempt to justify slavery is an attempt to disguise an abomination, and actually your own feelings, too.
Looking at this 1776 report, which is now available, there are people out there, listeners, who are concerned, and they want to help not just their family, but others have this better understanding of American history, a better understanding of the founding. How can they do that, and how might the 1776 report assist in that effort?
Well, the 1776 report is compact, beautiful in my argument, and true in my argument. It can be read by anybody pretty fast. And that's the key, right? Because we're not going to turn our country around unless we have a revival of knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And that requires conversation and teaching. And so everyone who's a citizen, I've been saying this for years, you know, I am called upon in my job to give a lot of talks to a lot of people. And sometimes they say, well, what's your action item? Well, I've usually already told them, study, learn, and teach. Everybody you know. Make the people around you better. I was just talking to Andrew Fink, our graduate, who's our representative in the Michigan legislature. That's what I just told him, and he's a very smart boy. I imagine he's going to do that. If he doesn't, we'll skin him.
Some people who are also concerned, of course, have perhaps some pessimism about our institutions of higher learning. Most, Hillsdale, of course, a notable exception. But our colleges and universities, what they're seeing on campus, what they know is being taught in some history classes or other classes, are you at all optimistic about the possibility of reforming the existing institutions?
Well, that'll take a long time. The elite ones, the top ones, are, you know, richer than Croesus, and they take them a long time for them to erode. But they are eroding. The respect for them is eroded. You just said it. And you know, Harvard is the top, right? When you think of what's the greatest university, people think of Harvard. Well, there are great things that happen there, still. But there are travesties that happen there. And, you know, that is a signal to people to look into it.
Mm-hmm.
What are they actually claiming? Does it make any sense? What does it mean for you, right, if it's done according to expertise? If Anthony Fauci is the Lord who describes how the society must work, then where is the room for you to live your life, to do your job, run your business if you have one, raise your children? If it's all experts, then what are we? We are just passive. We are just recipients. And that means that it's exactly like Lincoln's argument. He wrote a wonderful fragment once. He said, you say the black man is to be your slave because his skin is darker than yours. Take care. The next person you meet with lighter skin is your master. And then he makes the same couplet for intelligence. And that means if somebody, if you think you get to rule black people because you're smarter than they are, well, first of all, that turns out to be wrong. But second, even if it were true, then are you the smartest person in the world? Because whoever is the smartest person in the world gets to tell you what to do.
Dr. Larry Iron, president of Hillsdale College, chairman of the 1776 Commission, and the 1776 report is available now in an expanded version via Encounter Books. Dr. Iron, thanks for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
My pleasure.
Up next, we talk with Dr. Daryl Paul from Williams College about political correctness and higher education. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
Alan Gordon, Coachmaster Collision. Although Coachmaster is recognized as the authority and specialist in frame and suspension, we are primarily your auto body and truck collision repair center. This includes all vehicles, Lexus, Honda, or pickup trucks. Our technicians are highly trained and have the most advanced equipment to ensure a complete and quality repair. With our knowledge and the insurance claim process, all we need is your claim number to handle your claim. Coachmaster has a great working relationship with all insurance companies. This ensures a complete repair with quality parts and a delay-free process. At Coachmaster, in our 50 years in business, we've experienced almost every situation imaginable in a claim. This experience and personal dedication to the repair of your vehicle sets Coachmaster apart from all other choices. And yes, if we can't fix it, no one can.
Learn more online at CoachmasterAutobody.com.
Aloha, this is Kevin, operations manager at Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. A professionally cleaned business sends a message to your paying customers. It says you are a company that cares about your image and always presenting the very best impression. Time after time, I've talked to clients who shopped for the lowest price and after a few months realized that their professional image was suffering. They didn't know who was actually coming into their offices to do the cleaning, and they just weren't getting the value they were paying for. Be wary of big-name companies that take your money, then hire unknown contractors to do the work. Since 1987, Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, your local professionals, have been offering the best in office cleaning by our screened, bonded, and insured staff. Take pride in your business and say aloha to your customers with the professional cleaning services from Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. Call 221-5868, 221-5868, MauiBob'sOfficeCleaning.com.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. You can get an email every time there's a new episode of the show. Go to radiohour.hillsdale.edu. That's radiohour.hillsdale.edu. We're joined by Dr. Daryl Paul, professor of political science at Williams College. Dr. Paul, thanks for joining us.
Glad to be here.
And you're here on Hillsdale's campus as part of our CCA lecture series on the liberal arts and education today in your lecture titled Political Correctness and Higher Education. And so, frankly, I don't know what we're going to talk about. There's just nothing in this realm to possibly discuss. Of course, that's not true. You can also find Dr. Paul on Twitter at Daryl Mass, it's D-A-R-E-L, and an M-A-S-S. You wrote a piece almost 2 years ago at this point on the Great Awakening on college and university campuses, saying that colleges were caught up in this Great Awakening. What does that mean? What did you mean by that?
So I guess I could say two things in response to that. One, the sort of being caught up in, and the second on the Great Awakening. So I'll say something quickly about the Great Awakening. It's certainly not my phrase, but I think it's so appropriate because I think it captures what perhaps a decade or two ago we usually called political correctness. I prefer to say social justice or social justice ideology, even social justice religion, because I think it serves very much a religious function in society. And so it's that analogy, right, with the great awakenings of the American past. I think there is something quite similar in that way today. And it is deeply rooted in a social justice framework, if you will, that is certainly about racial justice, but it is also about racialism, I would say, an understanding of the world as formed by groups and the relationship between those groups being fundamentally one about exploitation. And so it has a degree of radical subjectivity, a degree of cultural relativism, and many of these aspects, which I think are quite dangerous to higher.
Is part of this, you mentioned it being almost a religious fervor or a faith involved in this awakening, and of course faith has these dogmas, you listed them, a structural violence, systemic racism, racial stress, white privilege, white fragility, implicit bias, microaggressions. Those are phrases that perhaps our listeners have heard of. Which of those are most important maybe to understand, to sort of have a full picture of what's happening?
So there was a book that was released in 2020 by two authors, Helen Pluckrose and James Lindsay. They've written a tremendous amount about this, and so I'd certainly recommend that book to listeners. But one of the things that I think is most helpful, most salutary about their book is the organizational framework they give for trying to understand this social justice ideology. And so they have what they call the knowledge principle and the political principle. Those are the places that I would encourage people to direct their focus. Social justice has a particular understanding of knowledge, who can know something and how they can know it. And that is really quite radically subjective. And it also is involved in, or it takes part of, a hierarchical understanding of the world, that people somehow on the bottom are the ones who know the most, and people on the top know the least. And then this is tied to the political principle, which is a belief that the world is not just infused with power, obviously it is, but that that's the only thing that exists in the world, and the relationship between groups is only one of power, and so therefore we are necessarily ensconced in a world in which all we can do with one another is struggle over power. Those are the themes, I think, that I would encourage people to really pull out of this ideology.
Talking with Dr. Darrow Paul, professor of political science at Williams College on campus as part of our lecture series on the liberal arts and education today, talking political correctness and higher education. You have some firsthand experience on these awakenings on campuses at Williams College. What happened there, somewhat briefly? What did you experience?
So Williams, at least in my experience, had been relatively immune to many of these things until the spring of 2019. And in the spring of 2019, there was an awakening, if you will, among the students on campus. And it was very much tied in with a couple of professors at the college who were making charges about the inherent racism of the institution and the inherent racism of the faculty at Williams College. And one of the things that they had done was to create a display, if you will, a display that honored the two professors in particular, one of whom is no longer at Williams College. And another faculty member, for reasons of safety and fire code violations, had moved a part of this display, and that just really sent the entire campus into a tumult. And obviously there were so many of the racial dimensions that we see around social justice involved. The students who were part of the awakening, if you will, and who had created this display were primarily black. The faculty member who had moved a part of the display was white, and so many of the racial tensions that social justice ideology not just plays upon, but in my view certainly inflames, were involved. And so it was a rather unpleasant experience overall. It had come also on the tail end of an effort that the faculty, or at least some members of the faculty, had made the prior semester in having Williams endorse the so-called Chicago principles around free speech. Now, ultimately, that endeavor failed, but I think it was quite helpful in getting the faculty at Williams, as well as some of the students, to talk about these issues. And it helped some of the faculty find one another as well through this experience in trying to work towards a way of thinking through how many of the goals, or at least the stated goals, I would say, that of social justice, can certainly be considered and included, but at the same time, the ideological dimensions, the quite frankly, the religious and faith dimensions of it, which in my view are quite dangerous, could be sidelined.
I want to talk about a couple of words and their definitions. First, violence. We think of violence in one way, right? We think of wars or physical violence. My guess is on Williams campus, when that display was moved, someone there said that was a violence against them. The moving of this inanimate object was a violence against them. So when the word violence is used in that context, what do they mean by that?
Many, I think, of the listeners will be familiar with John Stuart Mill, and John Stuart Mill has his famous harm principle. Right? One can act freely until one harms another person. Much of the problem, of course, with Mill's view is that harm is an unclear term, mm-hmm. and one can define harm in many different ways. What we have seen under social justice religion is an extreme expansion of the concept of harm, and so therefore violence is very much part of that. Violence is, in social justice religion, anything that really harms the self. That's, I think, the better way to think of it. And so because social justice religion or ideology, whichever term you might prefer, is very much wrapped up in an understanding that the world is socially constructed through language. Therefore, the language that we use, the use of symbols, is even more important than physical violence, particularly because, especially on college campuses, physical violence is practically non-existent. Mm-hmm. It also heightens the interest and importance of verbal slights, insults, and the kind of, if you will, speech that is used. And so therefore, we see much more interest in things like speech codes.
We'll pause right there. Back for more with Dr. Daryl Paul, talking about political correctness and higher education. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Remodeled kitchen, bathroom, or backyard patio? There's a lot of choices, but only one leader, Estate Granite.
Mike Huber has such a professional attitude and a can-do work ethic that makes him a joy to work with. Mike and his crew worked to have our new kitchen finished in 5 days. We came back to a true work of art.
Hi, this is Brian Filato, broker and co-owner of The Real Estate Group. In today's competitive market, I think what's important is that the house is dialed in and turnkey. And what's important is that the kitchen has been renovated, the bathrooms have been renovated, granite, beautiful cabinetry. Those things make a significant difference.
Mike at Estate Granite has an eye for detail, an attention to perfection, and a quality build crew that are masters of their craft. Mike was there from start to finish.
Hi, this is Mike from Estate Granite. I know how important quality to a homeowner is, so give me a call at 241-STONE. Or come by our showroom at 4900 Mountain Lakes Boulevard. Or visit us at estategranite.com.
Every Monday from 6 to 8 p.m., join us at Radio Wasteland, your local guide to the unexplained and the unknown. Each week we cover all things unexplained, from the moving stars in the sky to the things that go bump in the night. Visit us as we explore these topics and more as our in-studio team digs deeper with featured guests and listener call-ins. Mondays are rough, but now your overworked brain has a chance for some sweet relief with Radio Wasteland.
Radio Wasteland, Mondays at 6 on KCNR.
Hi, I'm Sue Blake with Powerhouse Solar. Solar energy not only makes financial sense, but right now you can go solar for zero money down. And you may qualify to get the 26% federal tax credit. At Powerhouse Solar, we are an elite dealer for SunPower, and we install the most cost-effective and highest efficiency panels. A lot of people don't realize they have options now. You can get the SunPower SunVault battery and solar with financing. So keeping the lights on when the grid goes down is easier than ever. And the entire system is backed by their 25-year warranty. Powerhouse Solar can design a system for your specific needs. Call Powerhouse Solar today at 275-5600 or visit us on the web at powerhousesolar.com. Again, call Powerhouse Solar at 275-5600 or visit us online at powerhousesolar.com.
Join Aaron Ryan and Bill Cundiff for We the People Radio every Sunday from noon until 2. Our expert guests will give you the whole story rather than a bunch of sound bites. Our commercial-free archives are always available at wethepeopleradio.us.
Sponsored in part by Pape Machinery, located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard, for all your local John Deere Ag and Turf products. Join us every Sunday from noon until 2, wethepeopleradio.us.
What shall we do about them?
Slow down.
Hi, this is Dr. Trudy Pratt. My chiropractic and nutrition practice in downtown Reading has been helping people feel better for over 20 years. We pride ourselves in really listening to our patients and then tailoring a program of nutrition, chiropractic care, massage, and exercise that's just right for you. The results can be dramatic. Call 244-7873. That's 244-7873. Thank you.
A Moment in History by KCNR and historian Dottie Smith. Moroville was an early gold mining settlement established in 1849 beside French Gulch Creek, approximately 1.5 miles west of French Gulch. It was named for H.W. Morrow, who owned a ranch on the creek. Soon the miners were finding too much gold and moved the settlement eastward beside Clear Creek in 1854 because mining was being carried out on the streets and under the houses. A Moment in History by KCNR and historian Dottie Smith. To find out more about Dottie Smith, go to the Shasta Historical Society.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertrand. We've been talking with Dr. Daryl Paul from Williams College, where he's a professor of political science, about higher education and political correctness. Dr. Paul, we were discussing these words that pop up during the course of your piece. The other word is listen. We are told by these social justice protesters that we should be quiet and listen. You did a lot of listening while these protests were happening on the Williams College campus, and I think you found out that listening is not enough, or listening in the classical definition is not necessarily what they mean.
I think that's true. At least that was certainly the conclusion that I drew from reading the materials that they produced, and helpfully they produced a lot of materials for someone like me to consider. So listening certainly involves, I think, a perfectly reasonable expectation to sit quietly and hear someone's point of view, hear someone's arguments. But generally what listen meant more deeply, to go beyond that, is listen to the authority of my experience. You must admit that my experience is authoritative because it is mine, and you have no access to it. And this is part of the, I think, tremendous difficulty for a traditionally liberal society like the United States to engage with this ideology, because it uses words that we are familiar with, both from kind of a liberal political perspective, and by liberal I mean sort of the liberal tradition. I don't mean, you know, sort of the Democratic Party or Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez or something like that. But also I think many Christian terms and terminology are used here, but they're used in very different ways. And so I think it is important to not simply assume, oh, they're using a word, I know what that word means, to always investigate the use of language, because for them, language is everything. The entire world is socially constructed. We have, according to the social justice ideology, no experience of reality of any kind. It is fully mediated by language, which is, of course, why they're so interested in policing everyone's language. If you're allowed to speak freely, you are engaging in a practice of constructing reality that may harm me. And so, therefore, I must prevent you from speaking and engaging in that harmful act. And if we begin to understand the ideology, we'll understand the way that they use terms much more clearly, I think much more helpfully.
Talking with Dr. Daryl Paul, professor of political science at Williams College, here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. He's on campus as part of our CCA lecture series, talking about political correctness and higher education. What is it about this movement that you think is so appealing to college-age students, and as we're seeing them graduate into the real world, take those these tenets, these dogmas with them. Why is there this enthusiasm on campuses for this movement?
My operative hypothesis, and I'll just leave it at that. I'm certainly willing to be persuaded otherwise, but my operative hypothesis is that it is a result of insufficiencies in the prior set of ideas, the prior ideology that existed. One can't look at the list of books that are produced, that are published in the United States today, without seeing a critique of meritocracy. Even in just the last 18 months, there have been, by my count, at least 8 different books that are criticizing meritocracy in the United States, and from different perspectives, both from the right and the left. No one seems to have a kind word to say for meritocracy, and yet meritocracy has been the system, the operating idea, if you will, of American higher education, I would say certainly since the 1960s, mm-hmm. and maybe even going back a little bit further. So much of, I think, social justice is a reaction against some of the claims, some of the arguments, some of the values of meritocracy. And so, therefore, because meritocracy didn't deliver many of the goods that it had promised, it didn't deliver the equality that it claimed to promise. It didn't deliver the happiness, the satisfaction in life that it claimed to deliver. There has been, I think, a reaction. And so I can certainly see in my own time at Williams College, I arrived there on campus in 2001, so in about the 20 years that I've been there, a real dramatic change in the cultural values mm-hmm. of the students. Williams used to have things like, I think I can say this on the radio, an event called Queer Bash, in which gay pornography was shown. That seems like a completely different era. That does not exist at Williams College anymore. But 15 years ago, that was considered to be part of perhaps one might call it a libertine atmosphere that I think was part of meritocracy. And so it's a reaction against, I think, many of those understandings and the feeling of emptiness, I think, in some ways, that has been filled by social justice ideology.
So these movements on campuses are related, but still unique in places. Is there a general sense of the demands? What do they want? We've spoken here about, you know, perhaps firings if there are professors who are targeted, speech codes, what can and can't be said. Is there a general sense of what is demanded from these social justice protests?
I'll say this. My response will be more broad, like well beyond Williams College, because I think Williams has not, at least so far, seen the more extreme versions of this. But if one looks around campuses in the United States, one of the things one notices is a kind of common template of demands. One of the more prominent demands is for psychological services, mm-hmm. believe it or not, which I think is extremely telling. There is, I think, a woundedness among many college students today that they recognize, but they don't know what to do with it. They don't know how to alleviate it, and quite frankly, I think most colleges and universities don't know how to alleviate it either. So the default answer becomes psychological services. Let's get more people into more therapy. Then, of course, there's the things that are quite familiar in terms of marginalizing, silencing, perhaps, right, even firing academics who cross the line, who say things that are impermissible to say. There are also demands to have the faculty in particular engage in mandatory sensitivity training. There is an expansion of the social justice bureaucracy, mm-hmm. if you will. And many of these things certainly occur. Whether they actually have any of the results that the social justice ideology expects them to have is a very different question. And in fact, there seems to be some good evidence that they don't tend to have the effects, which I think makes those who are interested in or those who have adopted this ideology or this faith even more frustrated that they are engaging in the practices that are supposed to produce the results they want, and they don't get the results. And so it makes them, I think, more inflamed in some ways, and I think from a psychological perspective, understandably so.
In thinking about this subject, I was struck by the fact that, at least in my memory, the past 12 months or so, we maybe have seen a decrease in the number of these protests or big movements, and of course, then it struck in my mind, well, pandemic. We are not in person. We do not have these communal gatherings as we've seen in the past in some of these videos on college campuses. Do you think that this pause for COVID reasons will have the effect of dampening those spirits and dampening the efforts once maybe there's a return in the fall to sort of a full in-person communal experience, or are we right back where we started from?
My sense is that will be the latter is more probable than the former, and I think exactly for the reasons that you said. Being in a pandemic, being in Zoom school, as it were, means that the kinds of interactions, interactions that have enabled these kinds of movements are just not occurring. And so I would expect them to more or less return to where they were previously. That being said, administrations have engaged in lots of work. While the students have been away, administrations have been building the bureaucracy. And in some ways, I think, trying to take control of these movements. The movements themselves are very amenable to having the administration of colleges and universities take them over, mm-hmm. because much of what they do is they appeal to authority to try to discipline those who, in their view, certainly need to be disciplined. This is not a system where one kind of takes power and authority into one's own hands, but it is a constant appeal to those who are already in positions of authority.
Dr. Daryl Paul, professor of political science at Williams College, on campus to deliver a lecture here as part of our CCA series, Political Correctness and Higher Education. Dr. Paul, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Glad to be here, Scott.
Up next, we talk with Dr. Sherry Rose, chairwoman of French here at Hillsdale College, about the college's study abroad program in France, which she also runs. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. For more information about Hillsdale College for prospective students, for friends of Hillsdale, or for alumni, head to hillsdale.edu. We're joined by Dr. Sherry Rose, chairwoman of French, associate professor of French, and director of the French Study Abroad programs here at Hillsdale College. Dr. Rose, thanks for joining us.
Thanks. I'm happy to be here.
We are talking specifically about the study abroad programs today in this conversation. Before we talk about what the students do when they're abroad, let's talk about what you've done abroad. How much time have you spent in France over the years?
Well, I'd say 2 full years and over 10 summers now. That has always been something that's motivated me with learning French. And my first trip abroad was when I was 16 in high school. I had won a scholarship and got to go with my class. I spent a semester in Strasbourg when I was at university and went back my senior year for a special independent study project. And then during graduate school, I taught 2 years in France, a year in Paris, a year in Lyon. And since I love going abroad so much, I've worked with many programs. I spent 8 summers in Lyon with a University of Virginia program and helped them with their first program in Paris as well. And now I'm working with Hillsdale.
Having spent so much time there, do you still consider yourself a tourist when you visit? Do you do the touristy things? Do you keep finding new places to visit? Is it, how do you spend time now that you've been there for so long?
Well, there is something fun about seeing Paris through the eyes of a tourist, mm-hmm. Who's never been there before. So there are some activities. I've been up the Eiffel Tower several times. I will never get tired of going to the Louvre or the Musée d'Orsay. Yeah. But then, you know, walking around and really trying to experience the town as a local is important. And so when I go over with teaching these study abroad programs, I tell the students that they're here to live. And so they get to experience the town as a local rather than a tourist.
Speaking generally about study abroad programs for our students, for any students, what are the benefits? What are the key benefits for a student who chooses to study abroad?
One of the seniors who's a French major was just in my office the other day telling me that her time in Tours was the most formative thing that she's done so far in her life, and it can really be life-changing. And for me, in college, after my semester abroad, I decided to go on to graduate school in French instead of taking the MCAT and pursuing a field or a career in medicine. So students who go abroad, it's really a great opportunity to be independent, to learn resilience and empathy, to see your culture from a different perspective. And so I think that whatever career you're considering, having that experience abroad can be very valuable in addition to all that it does for your language skills.
What's a typical program look like? How long does a student stay there? What activities are they typically involved in? I'm sure it's different for each student, but what do you try to have them accomplish while they're there?
A stay can vary from 1 month to a semester or a year, but even going for 4 weeks can really make a difference. So our students that spend a month in Tours over the summer, they're placed in a homestay, and that's a really important part because being placed with a French family, you get to have those conversations at mealtimes where a lot of the vocabulary building happens and really see how does this French family live? And then they're also in French classes about 21 hours a week, and so you're really immersing yourself in the language, studying not just reading, writing, listening, and speaking, but contemporary culture and history and maybe art and literature. There's also a lot of activities organized through the Institut de Touraine. That's where we send students from Hillsdale. So they might be going up to Mont Saint-Michel for a day or maybe biking to a castle.
In terms of the classes and the curriculum while they're there, are they alongside other students who are there studying abroad? Are they alongside just French students? What does that experience look like for them?
Well, we have a partnership with the Institut de Touraine, and they are actually an international institute, so they receive students coming from all over the world. And so I tell our Hillsdale students that this is a really exciting opportunity because you're going to be in French classes with people from South America, Europe, Asia, and so English won't be the common language. But with any study abroad experience, you get out of it what you put in, so it's quite possible to go abroad and still stay plugged into your English friend group. So it really takes a big kind of engagement on the part of the student to give themselves over to the immersion experience, and that's when they really find it rewarding.
What level of French is necessary to fully embrace and sort of get the most out of an experience like this?
Well, beginning sophomore year, that's when we start accepting applications, and some of that's just for maturity. And then it's good to be at intermediate or advanced intermediate level so that you can carry on a basic conversation. I think that you see the most progress with your speaking skills while you're over there. And so if you have kind of a basic proficiency, you've had 3 semesters of French, maybe 4, that's when you're really primed to then make big leaps and bounds with your linguistic abilities.
Talking with Dr. Sherry Rose, Chairwoman of French and Director of the French Study Abroad Programs here at Hillsdale College. For what kind of student is this generally the right option? What sorts of things do you talk about with students when you're perhaps advising them on whether or not to do something like this?
Well, our French majors are often double majors here, and they go into all sorts of careers afterwards. We have students that are interested in pre-law. A lot of our students pursue careers in teaching, but we've had others go on to graduate programs even in the sciences or history or finance. And most of them are wanting to go abroad to really put their French skills to use. There are some cases where maybe it's not the right time to go abroad. If you're dealing with maybe mental health issues or have something going on in your family where it's not the right moment, then, you know, that's things to consider and talk about. But most students are, I think, ready to go over and have an adventure.
So let's talk about feedback. What do you hear from students? We'll go both sides, right? What do they love? What do they come back raving about? And then do they report challenges or difficulties, perhaps with the language itself or French culture they're just not expecting?
Well, one difficulty that we encountered with the last group of students I went over with, this was in 2019, there were record heat waves, which is happening more and more frequently. And in France, air conditioning, it's not common. So even in the apartment I was renting, there was no air conditioner. So we were living through days of 108 degrees. And that's just an experience that we have not really encountered here in the U.S. of kind of living with the seasons and with nature. And so that can be character building in itself. So those are some of the challenges, kind of the grueling heat is one example. And then the things that they love are all the places they were able to visit, because usually they branch out and travel on the weekends. We do a weekend together in Paris between the 2 months in tour. Some of them go to Bordeaux or other geographical regions in France. And so each trip has its own adventures and stories that go along with it.
Traveling over there, and I guess after you're even in the country, slightly more serious note, in terms of like security, compared to the U.S., how would a student, or I mean, you've been there clearly too, how would you compare security measures at airports or at museums or at public places compared to what we'd be accustomed to here in the U.S.?
I always feel very safe when I'm in France, and part of that is when you're in these larger cities, there are so many people that are walking around and using public transportation to get to where they're going, that even at night, as a woman, I feel comfortable. But I do talk with students. It's better if you're going out at night to go with someone else instead of walking around by yourself. Tours, in particular, one of the reasons that we like this city is because of its smaller size. It's very easy to walk around the center of the town, and it's safe.
How many Hillsdale students typically are taking advantage of an opportunity like this, specifically through you in the French department, but I guess kind of overall through the other departments too?
Well, in I guess I'm in my sixth year now, and I've seen anywhere from 4 to 8 students interested. This summer we have a big group hoping to go abroad because with the pandemic we weren't able to go last summer, so there's about 15.
Dr. Sherry Rose, Chairwoman of French, Associate Professor of French, and Director of the French Study Abroad Programs here at Hillsdale College. Dr. Rose, thanks for joining us on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thank you. Au revoir.
That will wrap up this edition of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Our thanks to Dr. Larry Arn talking about the 1776 report, now available via Encounter Books. Daryl Paul from Williams College on political correctness and higher education. And Dr. Sherry Rose from Hillsdale on our study abroad program to France. Remember, you can hear new episodes every week on this station. You also can find extended versions of some of our interviews or listen anytime to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour podcast. Find it at SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify, or Amazon Podcasts. Just search for the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Email us at radiohour@hillsdale.edu. The assistant producer of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour is Nate Esbenshade. Until next week, I'm Scott Bertram, and this has been the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Some things in life you can just rely on, like the comfy fit of a favorite pair of jeans and the tried and true performance of a new home comfort system from Rood. So here's to reliability, built into everything we do. Rely on Rood.
Get reliable comfort when the weather turns cold with a new heating system installed by the local pros at Alliance Heating and Air. Call Alliance Heating and Air today at 530-221-2642.
Yet the deepest truths are best read between the lines and, for the most part, refuse to be written. Amos Bronson Alcott.
You're listening to Writing Roots, brought to you by Aspen House Publishing.
Welcome to Writing Roots. I'm Lee Hull.
And I'm Lee Esses. And today we're talking about one of my favorite things in the writer's toolbox.
Our topic is subtext. It's those things between the lines, the things that are implied. The things that we've talked about in the past when we tell you about world building and backstory. That is subtext. Subtext adds depth to your characters, to your settings, to your world, to your dialogue, to everything about writing. Which is why when we talk about making your outline or developing your world, developing your characters, that you know so much more about all the characters that you aren't putting in the book. So that your knowledge can be written in subtext. It's those things that you can imply by looking and showing he sees a dog and his muscles tighten and moves to the other side of the street. His breath quickens. So you can imply, yes, he is afraid of dogs and there is a story there without having to explain the story in a page and a half of useless backstory.
I would say this is a good litmus test for a skilled writer. Is there subtext in the moment? We spoke about this during our Diagnosis Writer series over the summer when we focused on dialogue. A lot of what we said was take stuff out of the quotation marks because then you're moving it to subtext and it becomes a more interesting read.
How do you write something without writing it?
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.